Nous sommes heureux d'accueillir Fiorenza Toccafondi, professeure à l'Université de Parme, dont la présentation aura lieu en anglais, Karl Bühler's Theory of Perception.
Thank you. In 1913, Bühler published the results of a series of experiments conducted on the Gestalt perceptions in a book entitled Die Gestaltwahrnehmung. He performed these experiments at the Institute of Psychology in Bonn under Kulpe's direction. His book was published during the years when the first experiment studies on the question of the Gestalt perceptions historically came to light. In the following years, Bühler did not adhere. On the contrary, he harshly criticized the systematic developments made by the Gestalt school founded by Max Wertheimer, but his perspective did not succeed in gaining the same reputation. Especially across the Atlantic Ocean, as underlined by Albert Welleck, after most European psychologists had emigrated to the United States as a result of the Nazi rise to the power, the Gestalt concept was exclusively interpreted according to the meaning given to it by the school Berlin founded by Wertheimer, Köhler, and Kafka, whose work was considered as the last contribution, says Welleck, of not only the German, but probably the entire European psychology to the American science. Die Gestaltwahrnehmung is a text dealing with psychophysics. Its specificity lies in the fact that Bühler does not intend to measure the threshold values, as had happened until then, of simple sensations, the intensity of a sound, the length of a line, the weight of an object, the luminosity of a light, and so on, but of more complex configurations, both spatial and temporal. For instance, the important results of a series of experiments dedicated to the comparison of rectangles featuring different degrees of slenderness are described in the chapter entitled Impressions of Size, Sides and Size Ratios. The results of these experiments show not only that the threshold through which the degree of slenderness of rectangles is observed it is surprisingly small, but also that it is often even smaller than the threshold through which the difference between the elements responsible of the degree of slenderness is recognized. That is the difference in length between the heights of the rectangles. Bühler sees something paradoxical in these results. First of all, because the impression of the slenderness of a rectangle is connected to the recognition to the length of its sides, and secondly, because noticing the difference between the lengths of two single segments of two isolated elements should be simpler than the Clerimont, says Bühler, the Clerimont difficult comparison between two rectangles, that is, between two different segment ratios. Therefore, data collected by Bühler show that the form exert a remarkable influence on the sensory threshold. Bühler affirms that the results he obtained prove the existence of gestalt impressions. Just for this reason, in Bühler's introduction to this book, the solutions set forth by the grad school, the milieu from which Ehrenfels, the author of the world famous Über Gestaltqualitäten, came from, were deemed to be unsatisfactory. The position held by the grad school was directly, indirectly inspired by the theories proposed by Alexius Meinong. According to Meinong, the gestalt qualities, which he calls complexionen, are quite similar contents to the relations of similarity, identity, difference. Gestalten must be considered as objects of higher order, ideal objects. The relation of identity and difference, for instance, do not exist. They are not entities we can find next to the other objects belonging to the physical and psychic reality. They exist among the sensible contents we perceive, contents on which they are founded and which they need to exist, but they do not exist in themselves. Similarly, when we perceive a melody, therefore a gestalt quality, we cannot express a judgment of existence about it because it does not exist in itself as the single notes do, but it exists among them and cannot emerge without the notes, although it cannot be reduced to them nor to their sum. The ideal nature attributed to Gestalten by Meinong is therefore significant for two reasons. First, it proposes a psychic or mental activity for them to emerge. And secondly, it bestows a particular status to this kind of objects, a status of subsistence bestehen, which Meinong steps up against the status of psychic or physical existence of the other objects. Bühler's criticism is directed right at the ideal nature attributed to Gestalten, also by Benussi, and to distance himself from this type of solution, he developed very, very tough critics against Benussi. The relation of difference. Although Bühler does not reject, but actually support the importance of the subject's psychic elaboration, expressed in these terms, in the terms of Meinong and Benussi, he deems Benussi and the Graz school's position to be untenable. Contrary to that which was stated by the grad school, Bühler interpreted the result of his own experiments on perceptive threshold as a proof in favor of the existence of gestalt impressions, which manifest themselves in an immediate way and feature and present, says Bühler, the same objectivity, nature as sensations. This turns Bühler's positions into a perspective which is very distant from the Graz school and much closer to the Berlin Gestaltpsychologie. Yet, despite both Bühler and the school founded by Wertheimer speak of Gestalt impressions, the gap between the two perspectives will remain huge. I think it is important to understand the reason. In 1925, the second volume of Lehrbuch der Philosophie was published and edited by Max de Soyer with the title Die Philosophie in ihren Einzelgebieten. The section dedicated to psychology was written by Kurt Kafka. After a few months, Bühler echoed what he said in the journal Zeitschrift für Psychologie in an article whose title represents a dispute in itself. Die neue Psychologie Kafkas, the new psychologie, psychology Kafkas, new psychology in inverted commas. According to Bühler, that which renders Gestaltpsychologie an unacceptable theory is the concourse of three factors: the criticism of the concept of sensation, the bold rejection of specific energies, the firm belief that Gestalten must be traced back to a tendency towards equilibrium shared by the physical, physiological, and the phenomenal world. In other words, the hypothesis of isomorphism. We will start from the rule played by sensation. The following statements by Kafka are typical in this regard. Sensations, says Kafka, as intermediate moments between stimulus and perception do not exist as immediate data. Rather, they are a result of the analysis, and their effect is the destruction of the original data, which appear to be already structured. Bühler strongly criticizes these and other similar statements made by Kafka and Gestaltists. However, his position regarding this point does not differ so much from Gestaltism. The fact that as early as 1913, Bühler explicitly spoke of Gestalt impressions proves that Bühler's theories is very distant from the idea so much criticized by the Gestaltpsychologie, according to which sensations should be considered a sort of initial stage made up of single, incoherent, and non-interacting sensations from which the perceptive process starts. This is clearly stated by Bühler also in Die Krise der Psychologie. According to Bühler, there is no trace of single isolated sensations in the actual experience, and as maintained by Gestaltists, sensations must be considered as an abstraction, the product of that analytical investigation of experience in which the material part of the theory of sensations is interested. An example used by Bühler also in the Neue Psychologie Kafkas and in die Erscheinungsweisen der Farben is the following one. Consider a painting featuring, among other things, a gray spot not bigger than a coin, and which was used by the author of the work to create the visual effect of the shade of an object. Then consider another painting featuring the same spot of color. The two spots are so similar that if perceived separately, one could be easily mistaken for the other. In the second painting, though, the same stroke takes a completely different iconic value, Bildwert, by representing the color of an object. It is then the attribution of a sense to the wall. It is the totality of the sense, sin ganze, that which defines the iconic value of the parts. According to Bühler, in perception, sensations are therefore placed within field through which they receive specific values. Sensations, claims Bühler, do not usually emerge separately, but rather they are channeled or inserted into variable totalities of psychic events, those undergoing alternating changes. Therefore, the Gestalt conception of sensation cannot explain alone the gap between Bühler's position and the Gestalt position. We will deal now with the law of specific energies. Kafka, as I mentioned before, in his work of 1925, expressed criticism against the general scope of the law of specific energies by Müller. According to the law formulated by the great physiologist Johannes Müller in the first half of the 19th century, the response to a stimulus occurs in a way which only depends on the stimulated sensory organ and not on the physical stimulus that causes it. Visual sensations occur even when the eye is pressed with the finger, taste sensations even when certain taste nerves are stimulated electrically from the external part of the ear without placing any substance on the tongue. According to Müller's law, points out Kafka, each type of perceptive experience states that what we experience is never connected to the physical characteristics of the external stimulus, but only to the reactions of our nerves. In discussing this perspective, Kafka questions its general scope, but does not boldly reject Müller's law at all, as polemically claimed by Bühler. Rather, Kafka, similarly to the whole Gestalt Psychologie, proposes to reduce the hiatus, the gap between the stimulus level and the experience level by assuming structural similarities between stimuli and perceptive experiences, that is, by assuming an isomorphic relationship between physical stimulus and experience. In commenting, In commenting on Kafka's stance, Bühler has no doubt about the conclusion to be drawn on his perspectives as well as on the Gestaltpsychologie as a whole. By putting together the criticism of the role of the single sensations, the discussion of Müller's law, and the hypothesis of isomorphies, the Gestaltpsychologie ends up, in Bühler's opinion, proposing a sort of reaffirmation of a similarity of the effect experience to the cause stimulus. According to Bühler, all of these is inconceivable after Müller, and even before Müller, after what was elaborated in the sphere of modern philosophy. Bühler is drastic in this regard. In his opinion, those who, like Kafka, claim to turn sensible qualities as such into the reproduction of their stimuli put themselves in conflict with what has been elaborated in this field since Locke and Descartes. I think this assertion clearly shows the tie bond between Bühler and modern philosophy, to which he will remain strongly tied, and in which his repeated distancing from the Gestaltpsychologie is rooted. As is known in Le Monde and Dietrich, Descartes emphasized the difference between our sensations and the things that generate them. Those polemizing with Aristotelian and scholastic conception, according to which the objects we experience send their images right inside our brain. The objects from which our sensations derive resemble our sensations no more than the tickling resemble the feather which occasions it. Descartes here resumes the famous example by Galileo Galilei. Therefore, Descartes suggests conceiving the relationship between sensations and objects, generating them on the basis of the model provided by the relationship between things and words. Words, signs, do not resemble at all the things they signify. Nevertheless, they are able to make us conceive them. In his essay, Locke in turn reintroduces the idea according to which the relationship between sensations and their causes must be conceived on the basis of the model provided by the linguistic metaphor and not on that provided by the pictorial metaphor. Idea, sensations, must be conceived as effect of a causal relationship with the external world. But this does not mean that the effect would resemble the cause. Smoke does not resemble fire, for example. Just this approach is resumed and developed in Hermann von Helmholtz's empiricism. Hermann had been one of Müller's pupils. Sensations are signs, clues that stand for things. Sensations speak of the world to us although they stand outside any pictorial relationship. In step with this tradition, according to Bühler, an essential sign function must be attributed first of all to the sensible data making up the perception matter, under which even the simplest quality are never and end in themselves, but act as clues for something else. Regarding von Helmholtz's empiricism, it must be said that compared to that of Locke, a very significant development occurs. In Locke, the perception is the first operation of all our intellectual faculties, but the perception is also considered to be the purely passive part of the thinking process. It is mere reception. Von Helmholtz, instead, through the concept of the unconscious inferences, establishes a real connection between logical reasoning and the reasoning resulting from perspective experience. Thus, he considers perception as an activity having a cognitive nature, which involves a different dimension of the subject than the physiological one. Therefore, the intrinsically interpretative character of perception turns out to be very stressed in von Helmholtz's perspective. Perception is the result of both an activity and construction transcending the sensory actualities. This is exactly the type of attitude characterizing Bühler theory. In his perspective, as in von Helmholtz, the subject's interpretative and pragmatic performance is central, and the very emphasis given to the performance leads Bühler to introduce analysis categories of perceptive data which reduce the centrality of those concept of structure and gestalt so cherished by the gestalt psychology. I would like to dwell on these aspects by considering the two following points. As I have just said, Bühler attributes an intrinsic sign function to sensation, thus transferring the perspective fact to the field of sematology, as he called semiotics. Speaking of sign function, Bühler here refers to the basic function of signs, that is to be in the place of something different from what they virtually are. This perfect perspective allows him to keep the semantic element at the center of the perceptive question, the relationship between sign, that is the sensation, and environmental objects. In developing this theory, Bühler outlines ideas which are pretty close to von Helmholtz's empiricism, and at the same time, he indicates a direction we will prove to be essential for Egon Brunswick, Bühler's pupil. B, in developing this perspective, Bühler clearly shows that in the relationship between sensation on the one hand and the structure on the other hand. The structure does not always turn out to be crucial for our perspective performance. The concept of structure, of gestalt, are certainly important to Bühler, but they alone, says Bühler, cannot satisfy the need for categories of psychology. This is especially true for what concerns perspective themes. Let us start from point A. As is known, Bühler matches three definitions of sense of the linguistic sign to the three functions of language: expressive function, appeal function, and representation function. Sign as symptom, as signal, and as symbols. According to Bühler, the formulation of a new, says Bühler, and very important thesis on the sense of perceptions goes in parallel with the linguistic theory outlined by him and consists in showing that with the three functions of the linguistic signs as signal, symptom, and symbols, says Bühler, the whole field of perceptions may be theoretically mastered. We have already dwelled on the sensations as symptom. In perception, sensation act as symptoms, Anzeichen, of the properties of things which are outside the human conscience and help the receiver to set up a meaningful relationship with the world. With this conception, Bühler clearly aims at pointing out the semiotic, pragmatic aspect of his theory, exactly as it happens in von Helmholtz's perspective. But the sensory impressions making up perspective experience might be deemed to be also signals. In fact, they may, thanks to the appeal function of sign, go into action by triggering and controlling the perspective event. The scent of a hare triggers the chase by the dog and at the same time leads its chase. In the hand, within the Erlebnis, the perceived signs act instead as symbols, as happens in the reading of a text. It is important to underline that with the such new and very important thesis on the sense of perception, Bühler intends to criticize the belief according to which only the symbolic relationship would bear any sense, hence the idea according to which it would be legitimate to talk of intentional relationship only in the case of symbolic knowledge. A dog backs away from another dog if it starts growling and behaves the same before a man treating it with a stick. The sight or scent of a mouse triggers a specific activity in the cat. A hunting dog chasing a hare follows its scent as a trace. The scent becomes a guide for the dog's chase. A sea urchin, the example is taken by Bühler from the behaviorist Jennings, reacts to every shading by assuming a defensive behavior, directing its aculei toward the shadow as to defend itself against any enemies that could have caused it. According to Buhler, all of these examples prove that in the animal behavior, semantic systems can be found and can be actually perfectly described. Buhler believes that this raises a precise theoretical and methodological requirement, that of extending the concept of sense and taking away the concept of understanding from the exclusive possession of the psychology of experience. With this perspective, Buhler indicates a direction that will be followed by Brunswick until the formulation of the concept of ratiomorphous thought, a notion that puts von Helmholtz's concept of unconscious inferences into circulation again, and not by accident. The concept of ratiomorphous thought used by Brunswick regarding the perceptive mechanism, in fact, relies on Buhler's idea of the existence of a, says Buhler, a not yet reflected use of signs, which, according to Buhler, must be considered, says Buhler, as a possible preliminary phase of understanding. This idea in the Crisi der Psychologie lies at the heart of a series of articulated criticisms voiced by Buhler toward the Geisteswissenschaften by Diltay and Spranger. Spranger's psychology has remained entangled in a mere intellectualistic conception of things, in an exclusively Platonic interpretation of the concept of sense, understanding, structure. Buhler is well aware that there is an immeasurable gap between the behavior of amoeba and the performance of human thought. But, says Buhler, when a semantic contact can be descriptively noticed among animals, when, says Buhler, visible controls of behavior emerge, when, says Buhler, a sign by the transmitter produces specific releases in the receiver, in all of these cases, we can legitimately assert that the sign was correctly used or understood by those who received it. And in each one of these cases, we deal with an event that seems to be, says Buhler, regulated in a total way and endowed with sense. Since also in animal behavior, semantic nexus are descriptively present, both the notion of structure and the notion of sense are fully entitled to the right of citizenship in the animal kingdom. The most important question that must be posed within the behavioristic conception, states Buhler again in Crisi der Psychologie, precisely concern the origin of that sort of pilot control according to object, which can also be found in animal kingdom. Bühler comes to establish in this way a very close relationship among perception, intentionality, and purposive activity, since the intentional moment connected to the use of sign essentially emerges as a relation of the means signs with the purpose, that is, to interact with the environment, to grasp the regularity of external reality, the properties of things through the sign represented by sensory impressions. We will now deal with point B. According to Bühler, the concept of structure and gestalt cannot satisfy the need for categories that psychology has. In effect, with reference to the Gestaltpsychologie, Bühler proposes a more pluralistic picture, an approach within which structure does not always prove to be determinant, decisive. Structure, gestalt, is certainly decisive in the example of the spot of color we previously mentioned, but it is not decisive for the phenomenon of the abstractive relevance, as called by Bühler, which is linked to the selective performance of our perception, a type of selectivity which is clearly recognized by Bühler as early as in the geistige Entwicklung des Kindes. This performance appears since the very first month of life. The baby reacts with anticipatory movement of sucking only when the feeding bottle showed to them has a specific shape. For the baby to react with sucking movement, it is sufficient to show the comforter, biberon, or something similarly pointed to them, whilst the bottle color and the movement by which it is introduced in their visual field are completely irrelevant. The principle of abstractive relevance is, for Bühler, a principle being valid for all that is sign, hence for perception too. In the latter, as we have already observed, sensations act as signs. The function of signs is to stand for something different from itself. The sign, in the well-known scholastic formulation, is id quod stat proalio, act as a substitute, replaces something else. Therefore, it is included in the question that semantics must be posed to itself, ask itself, says Bühler, by virtues of which properties it exerts the replacement function. Signs, which in the perception act as symptom or signal of something, obviously appear as sensible entities, as something clearly perceivable. But for them to perform their semantic function, it is not required at all that the sensible entity acting as a sign or in which the sign appears should go into action with the whole range of its concrete properties. On the contrary, what enables the sign to perform its function is this or that aspect of its constituting sensible entity perceived hic et nunc, whilst other abstract may become completely irrelevant. With road signs, for example, when we are in front a traffic light, different colors are taken as signs indicating stop or go. For those who go, the form or the sides of the signaling objects they see are not very important. What really matters is the chromatic component in action. Similarly, in the case of the sea urchin, any shading is a sign of danger, regardless of the form and the size and the structure of the shading or the context in which it materializes. Bühler's thought represented a primary source of inspiration for authors such as Egon Brunswick, Karl Popper, Konrad Lorenz, and Ludwig Kardos, who all attended in Vienna the Institute of Psychology founded and run by him. It seems to me very evident that regarding perceptive themes, Bühler's thought and observations have been one of the clues starting from which Brunswick and, in the case of the abstractive relevance, especially Konrad Lorenz, could develop their famous research concerning the concept of perceptive selectivity of our perception. I confine myself to recalling two paragraphs of one of the most renowned books by Lorenz, Die Rückseite des Spiegels, dedicated respectively to the triggering effects that certain stimuli have in the most disparate animal species and to the abstractive performance of perception. This is the title of this paragraph of Lorenz, The Abstractive Performance of Perception. On this subject, Lorenz cites Egon Brunswick's psychology in support of his own perspective. But Brunswick's conclusions, in their turn, originate directly from the indications provided by Bühler during the Viennese period, and those indications perhaps represent the most fertile result of that semantic foundation of perception, which I have tried to illustrate very briefly. In